Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today is Gittin Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's Shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins from the end of the top line of Daf Mem Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a Tat Nose, means a subtopic heading. By virtue of the fact we're calling this a subtopic, I'm sure you realize that we're continuing in the topic that we had discussed during our last Shiur. So to gain maximum benefit of the material, it's essential to be familiar with Daf Mem Aleph. The subtopic heading reads as follows. Omar Rabba. Rabba points out, or he takes the position that Kol Machloikas HaTanoim, the whole Tanaic disagreement we had between Rebbe and the Rabbonin, B'Sheshichrer Chatzi Chetzio V'Niyah Chetzio, in creating a Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, that was the subject of a Machlokas when you had a single owner who freed half of his holding in the slave and retained half of his holding. Aval shichrer chetzio u'mochar chetzio, let us say, a single owner of a slave freed half his slave and sold half to someone else. And the order of events also is going to be of significance, where he did either both acts, selling and freeing, in one shot, or he first sold half to someone else and then freed that which remained in his own possession. Rava tells us that in cases like that, Divrei HaKol Kana, everyone will agree, even the Rabbanan will agree, that it takes effect. The main idea being that as long as the original owner gets rid of everything he has in the slave, even though the slave continues to be a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, a half slave, half free, that does not prevent the transaction, the change in ownership from taking place. We've pointed out in the past, we'll mention it once again, that this idea of an original owner departing from his holding, losing, I don't want to use the word losing because we're not talking about a loss, but he's parting with his slave in its entirety, though the slave remains half free, half enslaved, the main thing is the owner is parting with his holding entirely. And the reason that's effective is because when you have that situation, it can be paralleled to isha, to divorce. And we've seen already quite a few times that the Torah, through a gzeirah shavah, makes a parallel through the gzeirah shavah of law. Now we go to the Gemara text. Top line, end of the line, Omar Rabo Machloikes B'Sheshichrer Chetzio V'Hinia Chetzio. The Machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachomim that we saw on Daf Mem Aleph is when he frees half and keeps half of the slave. In other words, he grants the slave partial freedom. A situation like that would be where the slave offered money to the owner corresponding to half his value, and the owner accepts, thereby the slave buying half his freedom. So he'll work one day for himself and one day for the master, alternating days. Avol, shichrer chetzio, umochar chetzio, onosan b'matona chetzio. If he freed the slave, and freed half his slave, and sold half his slave, either in one transaction, at one shot, or he sold half his slave to someone else, and then freed his remaining holding in the slave, or he gave his holding in the slave to someone else as a gift. Kevon de konofik mine kule, divrei hakol kona. Since the original owner's holding in the slave, he has parted with his holding in the slave entirely. Everyone agrees that it takes effect. The Gemara asks, and Abaye asks, you'll see we have a question, we call it a long question. Omer le Abaye, uvekuloi loy pligi. And when it comes to the entire parting with the slave, there is no machlokis, really? V'hotani chado. In developing this question, you'll notice we have an aleph, and the next line, a base. There are two Tanaic sources. And Abaye's question is based on a seeming contradiction in these two sources. And the resolution of that will be, in Abaye's mind, that the issue is a machlokes. Not like Rabbah claims everyone would agree. So let's now continue. V'hotani chada, one source says, ha'kosev nechosov l'shnei avodov. Konu umishachren zezeh, an owner of property, and included in his property are two slaves, and he writes a gift or deed to his two slaves. They konu means they acquire, and then they will free each other. Vetanyo idach, another source says, Ha'oimer kol nechosai nesunim leploni uploni avodai, af atzmom loy konu. One who says, I'm giving all of my property to so-and-so, my slaves, even themselves, they don't acquire. In other words, nothing takes place. There's no acquisition. So you have two sources that seemingly tell us the same story. Man, owner of property, giving it to two slaves. In one case, it takes effect. In the other case, nothing takes effect. When a man gives all his property to two slaves, so in your mind's eye, you can say that each slave becomes a half owner in the other slave. So why this seeming, let's say, disagreement in the sources? It must be Ha Rebbe the Ha Rabbanan. The source that says it takes effect would be in accordance with Rebbe. The source that says it doesn't take effect would be in accordance with the Rabbanan. Even though, and we point out again, the original owner is parting completely from his holding by virtue of the fact he's giving over all his property to these slaves. And yet, the issue is a machlokes. Let's take a look at Rashi on the first narrow line. Hakosev nechosov l'shnei avodov, shekosav shnei shtoros, kol nechosov l'zeh v'chol nechosov l'zeh. He wrote two documents. In each document, he wrote, "All of my properties are to you, and all of my properties are to you." V'zika l'shliach echad bevasachas, and he called upon a third party and said, "Listen, take these two documents," and he handed to them to the agent at once. And said, take it on their behalf, the palgi, the slaves split the property. The lo kidem echol chaver, one did not come in before the other. It was simultaneous. So they're both considered the owners of the property. So each one has half the properties. Vehein mishachon zeh, lefi shekol echad zocha b'chatzi chavero. As we explained before, each slave becomes now a half owner in the other slave. Source Aleph then says it does take effect when you are when the owner is parting with all of his holdings, and yet only half the slave is free, and the other half is owned by someone else. So the first source, it works. The second source says it doesn't work. The Gemara responds. In other words, Rabbah needs a defense, because Rabbah claimed that under those circumstances where the original owner parts with all of his holding, so then everyone would agree it takes effect. we see a house marking, and if you scan down the page, you'll notice there are four of these. These are attempts to resolve the question on behalf of Rabba. So the Gemara continues, lo, ed ved Rabbonan. Both sources are in accordance with the Rabbonan. Ha di Omar kulo, ha di Omar chatzi chatzi. In order to appreciate this, we'll learn the Rashi together. Ha di Omar kulo. We're looking at Rashi where we left off. Komaisa, the first source. Kagon shikosav shnei shtaros kidapricious. He wrote two documents, as we explained before. V'chol echad kosav kol nechosai leploni avdi. All of my properties are to you, the servant. And he writes a second document the same way, to the other servant. Umodu rabbonon, dekevon deziko lohem bevasachas v'nachki kulhu minei konu. Here the rabbonon will concede that it takes effect, that since everything left the owner's possession. Obasrai saw the second source, the Omar Chatzi Chatzi, Bishtar Echad Kosav Chatzi Nechosai Lucha. Half of my properties are to you, slave A. V'chein B'sheni Lechavero. Oh, and he said, half of my properties are to you, slave B. L'fikach Lo Kanu. It doesn't take effect. When you focus in on each star on its own, what you see is the owner is freeing half his slave, because he's saying to the slave, half of my properties belong to you. Included in his properties are the slave himself. So half goes to you, the slave. So you're now half free. What about the other half of his properties, including the other half of the slave? Well, the owner is keeping it. And that's the Shita Rabbonon, that when you're Meshachar Chatzi Avdo, the Rabbonon say it doesn't take effect. Veloni baya kosav u'mosar lozeh v'hodar mosar lozeh delo konu. It goes without saying that if he does this with the first slave and then he does that with the second slave, that it doesn't take effect. Dechi mosar lekamo, when he gave half his properties to the first slave, shir palgei v'lo kona. He's keeping half, and therefore it doesn't take effect. V'chein l'sheni, and the same thing with regard to the second slave. That's clear, that it won't take effect, according to the Rabbanan. Because in each one, he is keeping, the owner is keeping half his holding. Elo afilu mosar l'shneim ka'achas lo kono. Even if he were to give both of these Chatzi Nechosai documents to the two of them at once. We indicated you can do that with the assistance of an agent who accepts the two documents on their behalf. Lo konu, it still will not take effect. Since in each document he's writing half my properties. Maybe the same half of the properties he's actually giving to both of them. The other half of his properties, including half the slaves, he's keeping for himself. So that this approach explains that we don't have here a machlokas tanoim, but both of these sources are within the shita of the Rabbanan. The Gemara asks, v'homi dekont toni seifa. From the fact that the continuation of source Beis says as follows, V'im omar chatzi, chatzi, loy kono, michlal, deresha, di omar kulo. The resha, namely that which we saw in the Gemara text above in source Beis, it said there, lo kono. The assumption made in asking this question is that when you read the Seifa, which says V'im Omar Chatzi 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 Lo Konu, it's as if it's saying that if you say Chatzi Chatzi Nami Lo Kono, indicating that the case of Chatzi Chatzi is in addition to another case that's Lo Kono, namely where he said Kulo. So the so we have to then relinquish answer number one. In other words, even where he said kulo, it won't be effective. The Gemara says pirushe komeforish. No, source base is not referring to a case where he said kulo at all. Rather, in source base where it said af atzmon lo konu, it's to be understood as follows. Af atzmon lo konu keitzad. When do we say that it doesn't take effect, that the slaves don't acquire themselves? Kegol diomar chatzi chatzi, where he had said chatzi. However, as we said before, if he said kulo, if he wrote a shtar to his two avodim, and he gave it to them, it would work, even though each slave is acquiring only half of the other slave, but since the original owner is parting with them completely, it's effective, even according to the Rabbonan. Hachi nami mistabro. The Gemara feels that this answer, that source bays with its seifa, is in the pirushe komforesh fashion, that the continuation is an explanation of the beginning, is most likely. If you were to think that the beginning of source bays is where the owner had written kol nechosai to each slave, well, hashta omar kulo lo kono, where he's parting with them completely, you say it doesn't take effect. Omar chatzi chatzi mibaya, would you need to tell me the seifa where he says chatzi? No, it would be obvious that it would be ineffective. As is the case in all of the shas, you find this structure where the Gemara says, and it's most likely that way. You'll find 9 out of 10 times, if not more than that, the Gemara rejects the analysis. It doesn't reject the answer, but it rejects the claim that it's mistabra. And that's what happens right now. E mishum ha, if it's because of that reasoning that you're saying that it's to be understood as pirushi komaforesh, not so, lo irio, it's not speaking in that form. Rather, Tana Seifa the Gluya Reisha. The Tana might very well have taught the Seifa case of Chatzi Chatzi to shed light on the Reisha, shed light on the beginning of source base. Shelo Tomar, that you shouldn't think Reisha the Omar Chatzi Chatzi. Why does it say in the Seifa Chatzi Chatzi so that you shouldn't think that in the Reisha it was talking about Chatzi Chatzi? Avolomar kulo kono, but had he been kulo, it would have taken effect. So you shouldn't think that. So what did the source do so that you shouldn't think that? Tana seifa diomar chatzi chatzi. The Tana taught specifically in the seifa of source bays the case of chatzi chatzi. Michlau de reisha, you would then infer that if the seifa is talking about chatzi chatzi, the reisha, the beginning of source base, was not talking about that. Rather, diomar kulo, viafilu hachi lo kanu. And even so, it still does not take effect. So as we said, the answer that we gave in house number one is an answer that might very well be acceptable. All that we have done now in the last few lines is say that to try to say that it's mistaber, it's logical that that should be the answer based on the analysis that was given before, that far we cannot go. We continue. Vi boy esema lo kashi, another resolution of sources Aleph and Beis above, which will help to defend Rabbah. Lo kashi kan bishtar echod, kan bishnei shtoros. Source Beis is talking about a case of shtar echod. In order to appreciate this, again, we look at Rashi. Right across from here, bishtar echod, lo kona, kagon, kol nechosai, leploni uploni avodai, where he writes, all of my nechosim are to you and you, referring to slave A and slave B. Why will that not be effective? Because dichtiv law. The pasuk that serves as the basis of this discussion we saw in our previous shiur, O chufasha lo nitan law. The word law appears. And the word law, which in that pasuk we were dealing with, the freeing or non-freeing of a bondmaid. And the word law indicates the law, and to the exclusion of law ulecharverta. We say ancient, and as a result of that, of the understanding of the word law in that sense, means she and not she and her friend. This word law appears in the case of freeing of slaves, and it appears also in the case of divorce, where we have the pasuk, the cost of law, sefer krisus. And we learn from this, ein shtei noshim is gashus beget echad. If a man is married to two women and he wants to divorce both of them, he cannot write one get, one divorce document through which he would be divorcing both women. The ein shnei avodim mishtachrim beget echad. And likewise, two servants cannot be freed with one freedom document. So shtar echad will be ineffective, but shnei shtaros will be effective. Now, source bays, which we said is ineffective, is because it was shtar echad. How did we explain source bays? Not only how did we explain source bays, but source bays, we pointed out, had a seifa to it. It had a continuation, and it said in that continuation, v'imomar chatzi chatzi lo konu. Now, with that in mind, we continue in the Gemara. Bishtar echad. Are you saying that source bays above is talking about one document in which he gave all his properties to his two slaves in one document? My irya chatzi chatzi. Why does the seifa bother even mentioning the case of chatzi chatzi? Chatzi nechosai lezeh v'chatzi nechosai lezeh. Afilo makulo nami lo konu. Even if he writes all of my nechosim are to slave A and slave B in one document, it won't work. As we've been saying already a number of times, the more likely effective case would be where he says kulo, and even that's not effective because he used shtar echot, so why bother teaching the less likely case? The Gemara says, hachi nami ko'omar. We look at Rashi, hachi ko'omar, Rashi says, klomar lav pirushe kamaforesh, don't understand source base as a pirushe kamaforesh situation where source base is talking exclusively about chatzi chatzi. Rather, we continue reading, af atzmon lo konu. The slaves themselves, as source bays above said, will not acquire themselves. That's where one document is written. And as we explained before, because if you try to, let's say, free slaves, two slaves with one document, we learn from law, law v'lo l'chaverto. Not, that means law, and not law u'lechaverto. Avol b'shnei shtoros konu. V'im omar chatzi chatzi, af b'shnei shtoros nami loy konu. Because of the problem before of shear, he's keeping for himself the other half of his properties, including the second half of each slave. V'i boyesema lo kashya. Another resolution of sources Aleph and Beis above. Third house marking. Kan bevas achas, kan boze achar ze. In both shtoros, he indicated kulo. If he gave both documents to the slaves at one time, as we indicated before, through an agent who accepts the two shtoros at once, then that's what source Aleph was talking about. Konu mishachron zeh zeh. If, however, he gives the documents one after the other, then that's what source Beis is talking about. The Gemara rejects this approach. Let's analyze why. Bishlamo Basra lo koni. I understand that the second slave would not acquire dokoni le kamo. The first slave acquired all of the properties, including that slave, the second slave. Elakamo, but as far as the first slave, why does source Beis say that there's no acquisition? Why, if he gives two kulo documents, one after the other, why does the first slave not acquire? Elokamo likni nafshe v'likne l'chavrei. Let him acquire himself. After all, he's said to be the receiver of all of this man's properties, including himself, the slave. So he owns himself v'likne l'chavrei, and he owns also the second slave as a slave. Elo machvarta kidishaninon meikora. The Gemara appreciates this rejection and says it's machvarta, it's more likely, it's more correct, it's clearer to answer like we did earlier in terms of resolving the sources. Rav Ashi Omar, a fourth approach. We might as well point out ahead of time, since we're learning Gemara, not necessarily a novel, so we can like spoil the end already at the outset. Rav Ashi offers an answer, but the Gemara is going to reject the answer. You can see we have a long dechia, the dalet that you see to the side of the Gemara text. It's a long rejection. And at that point, the Gemara will go on to a new discussion. Well, what does Rav Ashi try to say anyway? Rav Ashi Omar, shiny hasam, in source Beis, the reason lo kanu is the kakuri lu avodai. The owner continues to call them his slaves. So that he's giving all of his properties to whom? In his mind, he's giving it to his slaves. In other words, they're going to remain his slaves. And that's why lo kanu, that's why it doesn't take effect. Now we look at Rashi, the kakuri lu avodai. Bishtar Gufei, in the document itself, the Kotoni, it says in the document, Kol Nechosai, and it said in the source base, it said, Kol Nechosai Leploni Uploni Avodai, all my properties to you and you, my servants, Shma Mino Lo Shechrinu Lididhu. You can see from here that he is not freeing them. Vitoya, this master is making a mistake. He thinks that he could give them, and they'll be, we'll say, independent owners of the rest of his properties without their being free. So in the master's mind, he's not freeing them by virtue of the fact that he's calling them slaves. The Gemara rejects this. Omar le Rav from the Rav Ashi. V'dilmo avodai shoyu kvar. The master is referring to them as slaves, not because they're going to continue being his slaves, but simply they are people that were once his slaves. So simply by the fact he's calling them avodai doesn't indicate that he is maintaining them. Milo tnan, do we not have the following source? And from the presentation of the source and the subsequent Gemara discussion, we'll see Rafram's point that when you call them Avodai, it doesn't mean that they are continuing to be as slaves, but rather it's a reference to what they once were. What does it say in this source? Milo Tanan HaKosev Kol Nechosev Le'Avdo Yetze L'Cheres. A person writes all of his properties to his slave. The slave goes free. Because when you're writing all of your properties to your slave, you're writing over the slave himself as an element of his properties to him. He becomes his own owner. Shir karka kol shehu lo yetze l'cheirus. If the master maintains in his own possession a piece of land, now he doesn't designate necessarily which piece of land. He simply writes in his in the document that he's assigning to the slave. He writes, I'm giving you all my properties except for a piece of land, a small piece of land. So the Tanakhama says he does not go free. You see, we don't know which piece of land he's keeping for himself. So any given minuscule piece of land might be that which the owner is keeping for himself. And since, with regard to the land, the slave doesn't acquire any of the land, because any one piece of land, any square millimeter of land, might be the land that the owner is keeping for himself. So I can't give it to the slave. I can't give any piece to the slave. So since, with regard to the land, the slave doesn't acquire, with regard to his own body, he also doesn't acquire. Because Rashi uses the term lo palgino dibura. We don't split what the owner says. What do we mean by that? Since in one statement the slave was supposed to acquire, and we discover that within that one statement the slave doesn't acquire some aspect, i.e. the properties, the real estate. So the other half of the statement, namely whatever is relevant regarding the slave as well, he doesn't acquire that either. So that's, as Rashi says, lo palgino dibura. Since the whole transaction to the slave was in one statement, one fell swoop, if you will, and since part of that fell swoop doesn't take effect at all, the other half of it, namely the slave acquiring himself, will not take effect. We continue in the Tanaic source. Rav Shimon Omer Li'olam Uben Chayrin, the slave will go free Ad Sheyomar, until he says Kol Nechosai Nesun Vloni Avdi Chutz Me Echod Me Ribo Shebahen. He says all of my properties go to you, the slave, except for 1/10,000th of them. He doesn't say except for karka kolshu. If he would have said except for karka kolshu, so the karka is real estate, that the slave doesn't get, but the slave owner owning himself, he would get. In that case, there's no issue of doubt of what the owner was keeping for himself. If he had said chutz mikarka kolshu, it's clear the owner is keeping for himself land, not the slave. However, if the shiur, that which is left out of the transaction, that which the owner keeps for himself, is vague, where he says 1/10,000th of my properties I'm keeping for myself. Well, what is that? It might very well be the slave himself. The owner doesn't consider the slave very important. He says the slave is worth to him only 1/10,000th of his properties, or he has a vast amount of properties as well. So where the owner says that, then I understand the slave does not go free, because what is the owner keeping for himself? It might be the slave himself is what the owner is keeping, so he doesn't go free. We now infer, Taimo di Omar, chutz me'echod me'ribu shebehen. The reason that the slave doesn't go free, as far as Rav Shimon is concerned, is because he said, I'm keeping 1/10,000th. Holo amar ochi koni. Had he not made the transaction on that condition with retaining something, the deal would have gone through. If he would have said, for example, kol nechosai nesunim leploni avdi, I'm giving all of my properties to so-and-so, my slave, without any retention of property, it would have worked. Well, am I for Eved Kokorile? But in the transfer, he's referring to, I'm giving all my properties to my Eved, my slave. It would have worked, though. What? How do we explain? Why is he referring to him as his Eved, as his slave? Elo Avdi, my slave, Shoya Kvar. I'm giving it to this man who was my slave in the past. Hachonami. So too, as far as Rav Ashi's explanation regarding source bays at the top of the page, Avodai, that word avodai is shehoyu kvar. They were my slaves. I'm giving my prize to these two fellows who were my slaves. Doesn't mean that they're going to continue to be his slaves. Therefore, Ravashi's explanation of source bays is why it shouldn't work, why it's lo kono based on his calling them avodai, that answer is rejected. Before we continue with the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads Shor Hamuad Shenogach Lemi Shechatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. A Shor Hamuad is an ox that's been determined to be a goring ox. It gored a person who's half slave, half free. How do we deal with the payments? We turn to the Gemara. Nokhoi shor. A shor, an ox, gored, a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin. Yoim shel rabo l'rabo, yoim shel atzmo l'atzmo. If the goring took place on the day that he is working for the master, we mentioned earlier that a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin works on alternating days, one for the master, the other for himself. If the goring took place on the day he's working for the master, so the payment goes to the master. If on the day that he is independent, working for himself, so the payment goes to himself. We take a look at the Rashi, third line under the Gemara text, No koi shor, amas nisin koi. This piece of Gemara is referring back to the Mishnah itself, and hence it's not a continuation of the immediate preceding discussion, but rather going back to the Mishnah, which featured Misha Chetzio Evet V'chulei, Umeimra Bi'almuhu. Now this comment of Rashi will be important for us later on. Meimra Bi'almuhu means what we just read in the Gemara is not a Tanaic source, it's a Amoraic statement. And being that it's an Amoraic statement, if you find Amoraim having a variant opinion, that this particular point in the Gemara does not represent a refutation. We continue in the Gemara. Elo me'ato. If this is how you're analyzing the way we deal with a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, well then, imagine the following. Yoim shel rabo yiso shivcha. On the day that he's enslaved to the master, that he's working for the master, so he would be allowed to marry a bondmaid. Yoim shel atzmo yiso bas chorin. And on the day that he's working for himself as a free man, so let him marry a Jewish woman. The Gemara says, no, that's rejected outhand. Isura lo kuamrinon. When you're dealing with the realm of ritual law as opposed to monetary or financial law, we don't have the concept of splitting. When it comes to money matters, so in general, money is something, sums of money can be divided. But when you're dealing with matters of isur veheter, that doesn't lend itself to division. Toshma. We introduce a long question, and you can see we have that till the second line from the top of Amud Beis. This source deals with a shor hamud, a goring ox. The details, by the way, of a goring type ox versus a shor tam, which is the ox that hasn't proven itself to be goring, those details and distinctions and differences are elaborated upon in Maseches Bava Kama. In the meantime, we continue. Toshma, Hamis mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin, a shor hamuad kills a slave who's half slave, half free. The Torah tells us that a goring ox that kills a full-fledged slave pays what we call shloishim shel kesef, 30 pieces of silver. It's a knas type payment. Knas payment means it's a payment that has no relevance or regard for the actual market value of the victim. So that a slave, no matter what his value is, if he is killed by a goring ox, shloishim shel kesef is paid. It's called a knas payment. If a goring ox kills a regular Jew, the payment there is based on the victim's market value, how much he could have been sold for had he been a slave. That payment is called koifer. It's a different type of payment. So one payment is called knas, the other payment is called koifer. Let's continue in the Gemara. So a slave, a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, was killed by a shor hamuad. How do we calculate the payment? So no saying chatzi knas l'raboi, half of the knas. If the knas was 30 pieces of silver, so it would be 15 pieces of silver would be given to the master. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. V'chatzi koifer liyorshov. And half of the koifer payment, we mentioned a moment ago that koifer was based on the person's market value, so we take half his market value and give that to his heirs. Amai, why should the payment be like that? If what the Gemara opened up with saying that when a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin is damaged, we evaluate things based on the day that it took place. Say the same thing here. Hachi nami lemo, say to here. Yoim shel rabo l'rabo, if the death took place on the day that he was working as a slave for the master, so then the payment shall be to the master. And yoim shel atzmo l'atzmo, and if the death took place on the day he was independent, so the payment should be to him. Why does the source say that payment is made to both parties, half the knas to the eved, half the knas to the rabo, to the master, and half the kofer, half the payment made for a free man to the chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin's heirs? The Gemara says, "Shaini hocha." The case featured concerning the Tanaic source where the Eved was killed, where the Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin was killed, the Kokalio Karna, the entire principal value, the whole person is gone. Kali means is finished off, is destroyed, he's killed. So in a case where Kalio Karna, then we have to allocate funds to both interested parties, the heirs of the slave and the owner. The Elohechi Domi Dolo Kalya Karna. What would be an example where the principle is not destroyed? After all, in damages, you could have, let's say, a limb that is cut off, so the person is still alive, but the principal value of that limb is gone. So we're looking for a situation when we ask here about what's lo kalya karna, a situation where there's a temporary loss in value, but it will be restored. So the Gemara says, kigon shiko al yodo, where the injury was on the individual's arm, v'tzomsa yodo v'seifel aser, and the arm, tzomsa, Rashi says, yovsha, dried out, but it will heal, it will get better. Now, we look at Rashi on the second line from the top, v'seifel aser, v'shaiminon le, and we evaluate, as far as how much payment, kama domov p'chusim b'kach, how much depreciation is there right now with the current injury? Limkor achshav b'shuk, as far as being sold now in the slave market. V'im yoim shel rabo hoya, and if the damage took place on the day that he's working as a slave, yinosein hakol rabo, then all of that depreciation will be paid to the master. V'im yoim shel atzmo hoya hakol atzmo. And if it's on a day that he's working for himself as a half free man, so the entire depreciation will be paid. He will benefit then from that payment. Let's continue in the Gemara. Ha nicha la'abaye. The analysis that we have just given to explaining the opening statement of the Gemara, the Maimra of Yoim Shel Rabo L'Rabo, Yoim Shel Atzmo L'Atzmo. This works out according to Abaye's approach. The Omar, Noisein Loi Sheves Gedela V'Sheves K'tana Shapir. That in the event that a person would have inflicted the injury, there are two types of payments. Sheves has to do with a person like the word Shabbos, where he is inactive. He's been rendered unemployed. There's two aspects of unemployment, which we'll look into shortly when we get into the Rashi. Bear in mind that we're talking about an ox that gores. What Abaye, the reference right now to Abaye, concerns a person that inflicts injury on another person. When a person inflicts injury, there are five types of payments that must be accounted for. They include a Nezek, Sheves, Tsar, Boishas, and Ripui. Those are the names of the different payments, medical bills, unemployment, depreciation, embarrassment, all kinds of payments that are figured when a person injures someone else. When it comes to an animal, an ox inflicting injury, there's only one payment that the Torah demands of the owner, and that's the Nezek payment. The other payments that we just referred to, the temporary unemployment, the embarrassment fee, those are not paid when an animal inflicts the injury. We have just described the injury of Tzomtza Yodoy. He called Yodoy v'Tzomtza Yodoy. And we are using that example, that case, to explain the opening maimra of the Gemara, of the where the ox gored. Is there a payment when an ox inflicts an injury like that, Tzomtza Yodoy? So according to Abaye, an ox will be included in paying for that because, in general, an injury like that of Tzomtza Yodoy, what's called temporary type injury, when it comes to a person inflicting it, he is obligated to pay two payments. Sheves Gedoylo is also termed Nezek. That's the other name. It's another name for Sheves Gedoylo. And Sheves Ketana is what we ordinarily refer to as the Sheves payment. When it comes to an ox, so an ox doesn't pay that, the Sheves Ketana, the temporary unemployment value. An ox pays only Nezek. Well, according to Abaye, an injury like this of Tzomtza Yodo involves a Nezek payment. But according to Rava, the Gemara goes on to say, Ela la Rava d'yamar eino noisein loy ela shifte shebechol yoyim v'yoyim. When a person inflicts a Tzomtza Yodo type injury, the only payment that is made is a Sheves payment. A Sheves payment is a daily unemployment rate. We'll get into that again. We're going to look at the Rashi shortly, after we just finished the flow of the Gemara. According to Rava, this type of injury of Tzomtza Yodoy doesn't involve the Nezek type payment. And therefore, the Gemara says, Hai Shor Hu. We're talking right now about a Shor inflicting the injury. V'Shor Eino Mishalim Elo Nezek. A shor owner, the owner of an ox, which imposed an injury, does not pay this daily unemployment rate. He pays only an initial depreciation value. That's called nezek. Well, if that's the case, then the opening statement of the Gemara of Nokho Shor, then Yom Shel Rabo L'Rabo, Yom Shel Atzmo L'Atzmo, we were asking for what's the case of lo kalya karna that we don't split the payment between the owner and the slave. So we came up with this idea of tzomtza yodoy. Well, if it's a case of tzomtza yodoy, and you're dealing with an ox inflicting the injury, according to Rava, there's no payment at all that would be made. So how do you explain yoyim shel rabo l'rabo yoyim shel atzmo liatzmo? The Gemara answers. There are two answers the Gemara gives. Iboy esem okishiko otom. The Gemara, in the opening, that statement of Yoyim Shel Rabo L'Rabo, Yoyim Shel Atzmo L'Atzmo, is not talking about an ox inflicting the injury. Rather, it's talking about a case where a person inflicts the injury. Viboy esem, another approach is that Okay, the opening of the Gemara spoke about an ox inflicting an injury, and that opening Gemara fits in with Abaye's approach to the matter, who says that in some Sayyada there is also a din nezek. Main Rahi, that opening statement of the Gemara was an Amoraic statement. Umein Ra, the Rava, lo Svirale. And Rava doesn't hold from that Main Ra. In other words, if an ox inflicted an injury like that of Tzom Tzayado, Rava would never say, Yoim Sharaba, the Rabbi Yom Shalas Mas, because an ox is not, the owner of the ox is not guilty of paying for that type of injury. At this point, then, you can see we've gone over the framework of the Gemara, and a number of details were left out because we're relying on Rashi to fill them in. So let us now look at the Rashi on the first narrow line. Rashi is referring to the injury of Hiko al Yodo v'tzomse Yodoi. So noisin lo sheves gedola v'sheves ktana. Abaye said that in an injury like that, there are two payments. Sheves gedola. What is sheves gedola? Hein pchas domov limocher achshav b'shuk v'hu nezek. We indicated that before in our explanation. That's the nezek payment. Just to go over the framework of payments. When a person inflicts an injury on a fellow man, there are five different kinds of payments. We listed them off before: nezek, sheves, tsar, boishes, and ripui. We have to focus right now on two of those kinds of damage payments. Sheves gedola, that Abayi referred to as the nezek payment. Ulachi korle sheves. Why is it called sheves? Means refers to unemployment. When we speak about the term nezek, that's a reference to a depreciation. How much he would be worth now to be sold in the marketplace, in contrast to how much he would have been worth sold as a fully healthy person. Why is it called sheves? Shepchas domov shel achshav eino elo mishum sheves sheneroi lasois melocha b'shtei yodov ad zman shetavsu yodoi. Why is there depreciation? Oh, it's because he cannot be employed the way he used to be employed. He used to do work with both hands, and now he can't. Now he can work only with one hand. So he's worth less. And what does a person who has only one hand available for working, what can he do? Elo lishmor kishuim yeroi liachar shiyekom imenu. When the initial pain leaves, he'll be able to work as a guard of a kishuim, type of vegetation, a field in which kishuim grow. He can work as a guard. So the depreciation that we're speaking about, the nezek, which is associated with depreciation, is associated with his inability to work. Hence, the word sheves has relevance. Sheves meaning is a word referring to someone who is unemployed. V'sheves ktana, what does that payment refer to? Hainu ki'ilu hu shomer kishum shenoisin l'kol yumei cholyoi sheyishka v'mita machmas choyli zeh sheno yochol lishmor kishuim. When a person has been injured, if he's bedridden, he can't even do that, minor task of a shomer kishuim. So he's totally unemployed during the time that he can't do even that. So he receives a daily payment of, I will say, a watchman rate. Daily Shomer Kishuim payment. So since we've described the Tzomtze Yodoi injury as having two elements to it, there's a depreciation value and the daily unemployment rate that he is compensated with. So when it comes to an ox imposing such an injury, Rashi goes on, Shapir, the cave on the Shaykh din nezek b'makazu, since we do impose that payment in an injury like this, Mechayev shor Allah, the ox comes into the picture and the owner is obligated to pay. The cave on the lokalya karna legamri yoim shel rabo larabo yoim shel atzmo liatzmo. And since we're talking about a type of injury that doesn't involve a total loss, he's still alive, he's going to get better, So therefore, the payment that's made is dependent on the day on which the injury took place. The Rashi goes on, Shiftoi shokol yoyim v'yoyim, according to Rava, that said that the only payment that's made in this case of a tsomso yodel type injury, the ein kan pas domen, there's no recognition of depreciation. Why not? He's going to get better. The only payment that's made is a daily unemployment rate. According to Rava, we evaluate how much the person would have made as a healthy person in his regular job. What was his daily income? And now that he's bedridden, when he gets out of bed, he'll be able to do guard duty until he gets fully better. So that difference is what he is paid. That's an unemployment calculation as opposed to a depreciation calculation. And that is something that has no relevance to an ox that imposes that kind of damage. We now go back to the Gemara with a new marking. On the side, under the Mivne heading, we have a diamond feature, She'elois Ibaya Lahu. Each one of these diamonds highlights the expression Ibaya Lahu. These are questions, Be'inyan Avodim. What's common to this extensive list of diamonds is that these are all questions that are related to slaves. You'll notice a double underline marking accompanying the first two diamonds. These are two she'elois b'inyan me'ukov get shichror. That's a case where you're dealing with a slave who is destined to receive a freedom document. In other words, you're dealing with a fellow who had been a slave, and he's in a situation where it's inevitable that he will be receiving a get shichur. So the first two questions relate to that scenario. How do you view such an individual? Do you view him as fully free, a full-fledged Jew, or by virtue of the fact that he has not yet received the get shichur, even though financially he's not working as a slave anymore, we nevertheless view him with the laws of a slave? And that's, of course, far-reaching. We have to look at each example as we go on with each question. We are going to, in this Gemara, employ something which we do rarely in Gemara markings. We're going to continue the use of the diamond along the margin and highlight the word nosei. Nosei, we usually feature on the side simply with underlining the word, but in this case, each question represents a new topic. So to give you the feeling of continuing the question aspect of this, so the series of questions, you'll notice diamonds running down the margin, each diamond introducing the question, which, as we said, each one represents a new topic. Now, this marking scheme is going to continue down Mem Gimel Omer Aleph, so that in the context of this our today's Daf Yomi Shir, we're not going to be completing all of these questions. But each question really can be viewed as a separate topic. Now, we continue in the Gemara itself. But before we do that, actually, let's read the first Nosei, with the diamond on the side, she'ela. The question is as follows: Nakhoi shor vehemis esmi shehoyim ukov get shichur. An ox came and gored and killed an individual who was a slave, but was to receive a freedom document. Hayim yesh tashlum knas l'rabo. Does the master receive the knas payment? We mentioned earlier today that when a slave is killed by a shor hamuad, a fixed rate payment, 30 pieces of silver, are to be paid by the owner of the damaging ox. That payment is called a knas. It's a knas type payment. We explained before that a knas type payment is a type of payment that does not relate to the actual value of the victim. It's a fixed rate payment. The Gemara. Ibai laho. Me'ukov get shichur. Yesh loy knas oy ein loy knas. Is a knas payment to be made or not? And there are two sides of the analysis. Aleph oy dilma beis. Kesef shloishim shkolim yitein ladoinov. Omar Rachmona. The Torah says that when a slave is killed, so 30 pieces of silver are paid to the master. Now the fellow we're talking about right now isn't working as a slave. So you can't refer to his previous owner as the Adon, as the master. Oy Dilma, Keva de Mechusar get Shechur. On the other hand, since he hasn't actually received the freedom document, Adon Karin Obey, the term Adon, which you see in the Pasuk, has relevance. So the 30 pieces of silver would be paid to his former master. Before going further in the Gemara, let's glance at the Rashi. The Rashi that we're looking at is further down. Me'ukov get shichur, mechusar get shichur. Kol hanoch damrina behu. All those examples of slaves where we say de yetsu lecherus vein the rabbeleim ella shetzrichem get shichur, that he's to go free, and the only additional requirement is that he has to receive a freedom document, kagon. These are examples that Rashi gives examples of things that we've learned in the past. Makdish, someone was dedicated, he sanctified his slave, or mafkir, or declared his slave unowned. Umishechetzio ben chorin, disnan kofen es rabu. We saw in the Mishnah that a person who's half free, half slave, Beis Shammai says you got to force the master to free him, otherwise he won't have anyone to marry. And Beis Hillel conceded to that. So the Rav, the master, is forced to free him, and eventually has to give him a freedom document. So at this point in time that he hasn't received, physically received the freedom document, he was killed by a Shor Hamuad, is there a knas payment to be made? Toshma. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice the use of triangles. These are responses in two different directions. Hence, the triangle appears as it does first with the point facing up, an attempt to say that there is a payment, and the inverted triangle, you'll see a couple lines later, indicating that there should be no payment of knas. Well, let's see. Toshma. Hamis mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. A shor hamuad killed a half slave, half free man. Noisin chatzi knas the rabbi v'chatzi koyfer liyorshav. So you see that there is a knas payment. Half of the knas is paid to the owner. My lav k'mishna achrona. Are we not to assume that this Tanaic source is in accordance with the final teaching in the Mishnah concerning the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Bechorin, where Beis Hillel conceded to Beis Shammai that the master frees him, and all the master has to do is give him a get shichur. So he's a case of a Me'ukov get shichur. Lo, the Gemara says, no, you don't see that. That's not the case here. Rather, Kemishna Rishoyna. The Chatzi Eved Chatzi Bechorin that's referred to here is in accordance with the early teaching of Beis Hillel, where it said he remains a slave since he's half slave, half free, so he works for his master one day, he works for himself the other day, on alternating days. There's no Kofen Es Rabo, so he's not considered a Me'ukov Get Shichur, someone who is inevitably going to receive a freedom document. So as far as we're concerned, we're dealing with a regular slave situation. True, he's half slave, but it's not relevant. The source is not relevant. If you're going to associate with Mishnah Rishonah, with the early teaching of Beis Hillel, it's not going to have relevance to our discussion. Toshma. Here we have a source that we're going to see that there is no knas payment. What does it say? Hipil es shinoi v'simo eseno. The owner inflicted injury on his slave, double injury. He knocked out his tooth, and he caused blindness to his eye. So first he knocked out his tooth, and then he blinded his slave. We know that in accordance with the Torah, the slave goes free if one of these are knocked out. Here he now experienced two knocked out. So the result is Yoitse Bishinoi. He goes free based on his tooth being knocked out. And then after that, the master blinded him. And the master then has to pay to the slave the value of his eye. And again, we emphasize the thinking right now is this slave who is now, he's been freed by virtue of the tooth being knocked out, but that master has to give him a get shichur. So, until he's given the get shichur, he's a ma'ukov get shichur. He conforms to our Gemara's question. If, regarding the issue of the knas payment, regarding a ma'ukav get shichur, the knas payment is made, and it's made to the owner of the slave, who's a ma'ukav get shichur, well then, hashto chavli be achrini yavi leila rabbe. We just see here in the case of the knas, if some outsider, some outsider's ox killed the ma'ukav get shichur. Payment is made to the master. Chaval be rabbe gufei, where the master himself imposed the injury. Yohiv lei l'didei, would the master then be expected to pay the slave? So what must be, since we see that the slave is going to get paid by the master, it must be therefore that in the case of the knas payment for a mukav get shichur, there isn't going to be any payment to the master. Just to repeat, if the master would be receiving the payment, how in the world could you imagine the master then paying the slave in the case of simos einoi? The Gemara rejects this conclusion. Now, you'll notice we have a long marking. Dilma, it could be that this source that says Noisein de Me'enoi is Keman de Omar Eino Tzorech. The master doesn't need to give a get shichur, that once the tooth was knocked out, he's totally free. And he's not a me'ukav get shichur, and therefore the case of noisin d'me'enu has no relevance to our question. We are asking about an eved that needs to yet receive a get shichur, and prior to the receipt of that, we'll say inevitable get shichur, what is his status? That remains a question. As far as the source just quoted, it's dealing with a situation where he's totally free without any need for a get shichur, desanya. And now we have a source in which you'll see a number of different Tanaic opinions on the topic of a limb being knocked out. In the halachic literature, there is mention made of 24 roshei evorim, limb tips. The topic of Rosh Hashanah has relevance to the realm of Nigoyim. Rashi gets into the details. We don't have to delve into those details, but all we have to say is that when we speak about the slave going free, the Torah speaks about Shein V'ayin, tooth and eye. Are other limbs also, if knocked out, resulting in the slaves going free? So we continue now with that background. B'kulon eved yoytse ben l'cherus, regarding all 24 different limbs that are referred to in Maseches Negoyim, if the master knocks them out, the slave goes free. V'tzorech get shifra me'rabo div Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that he also needs to receive a freedom document. Rabbi Meir Omer, Eino Tzorach. Now we've dashed underline Eino Tzorach because this is the Shita, and all those who agree with him are the source of the Gemara's rejection. When we said Dilma Kaman Omer Eino Tzorach right before this source, that when a limb is knocked out, He goes free without any need for a freedom document. He's not called a Mu'ukav Get Shichur. Rabbi Elazar Amar Tzarach. Rabbi Elazar goes like the first opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that he needs a Get Shichur. Rabbi Tarfon Amar Eino Tzarach. Rabbi Akiva Amar Tzarach. Rabbi Akiva says he does need. HaMachrim Lefnei Chachomim Omrim. This is another opinion. There's no name, but it's the word machriyin has to do with those that decide matters of controversy. So the machriyin, if they chachomim say that this particular unnamed opinion says nirim divrei Rabbi Tarfon b'shein v'ayin. Rabbi Tarfon is the one that said eino tzorach, that you don't need a get shichur. That is the opinion that we would accept. B'shein v'ayin means in the case where either a tooth or an eye are knocked out by the master. Hayo v'Torah zichsolo, since the Torah grants freedom to the slave through those particular limbs, the tooth and the eye. V'divrei Rabbi Akiva b'shar evorim, and the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that there is a need for a get shichur when you're dealing with the 22 other limbs. And if we skip the brackets for a moment, hayul umedrish chachomim hu, since those other limbs are not explicit in the Torah, but rather are derived through oral tradition in that's called medrish chachomim, how the oral tradition expounds upon the psukim. Let's go over the brackets. We say that Rabbi Akiva's opinion is to be accepted when you're dealing with the Shar Evarim, Hayil Uknas Chachomim Hu, since it's a rabbinic imposed fine to have the master lose his slave when those other limbs are knocked out by the master. So here the Gemara asks, what do you mean Knas Chachomim? Knas? How kroy kodarshina? It's not a rabbinic fine that's imposed. It's the halacha regarding the other Rosh Eivorim, the other 22 tips of limbs, are based on scriptural analysis. Elo Ema, rather say, as far as why is a get shichur required for the limbs other than shein v'ayin, the tooth and eye, hayo umedrish chachomim hu. Since it's based on the something that's not explicit in the psukim, but derived from the psukim through the oral tradition. So since it's less explicit, so in order to compensate for, we'll say, that level of vagueness, if you will, maybe that's not the best choice of words, but nevertheless, for that less explicit aspect of the 22 other Rosh Eivorim, when the master knocks one of them out, he has to provide a get shichur as well. We now have a new question on the side. We have under the nosei, the topic heading, where you see that enclosed by a diamond. Eved shel kohen shemu'ukav get shichur, the slave of a kohen who is awaiting his freedom document. Haim adayin zakai lechol betruma. If imagine a kohen had declared his slave unowned, and we say that the slave is now unowned, he's not obligated to work anymore, but the master has to give him, in this case a kohen, has to give him a freedom document. A kohen, as I'm sure most of you know, is entitled to receive the truma tithe, and he eats that. It's forbidden for a non-Kohen to eat the tithe, the truma tithe that people separate from their produce. The possessions of a Kohen, for example, is the Kohen's slave, a woman married to a Kohen. These are examples of individuals that, by virtue of the fact that a Kohen acquired them, they are entitled by the Torah to eat truma as well. And now we turn to the Gemara. Ibayalaho, Me'ukov get shuchur, oichel betrumo eino oichel. Someone who is, as we described, he's awaiting his get shuchur. Does he continue eating truma or not? Kinyan kasmin rachmona by lav kinyan kaspahu. Does the Torah entitle only he who is a kinyan kaspahu, who is an acquisition that the Kohen had paid money to receive? And he is the Kohen's acquisition. He's under the jurisdiction of the Kohen. he eats truma. Now this eved that's been declared unowned or sanctified, he's not under the jurisdiction of the kohen, so we can't call him kinyan kaspo. Oy dilma, or maybe kevin the mechuser gets shichur kinyan kaspo kinyabe. Since the eved hasn't yet received the freedom document, he's still under the title of kinyan kaspo. And if that be the case, he would be able to eat truma until he receives the get shichur. Toshma, the Omar Rav Mesharshia. Kehenes shenesar vlada bevlad shivchosam. Listen, here is a situation where a woman married to a kohen is pregnant, and that kohen has a bondmaid who's also pregnant. Two women give birth, and there is a baby mix-up. In other words, we don't know which baby is the son of the kohen, a real kohen, and we don't know which baby is the slave. In other words, the son of the bondmaid. What do we do with these children? How do we resolve their identity, if you will? So we're not going to resolve their actual identity, but the following is the procedure. Hare elu oichlin b'truma. These two individuals are entitled to eat truma. V'cholkin chelik echad al ha-goren. And they come together to the granary where the tithes are distributed. They come together and receive one portion. Higdilu ataroibus mishachrim zazen. When they become adults, these two babies whose identity is shrouded in doubt, they free each other. Now, what do we see from this story? We see, me'ukov gets shichur. They have to free each other because each one might be the slave and the other one his master. So each one gives a freedom document to the other. So they're me'ukov gets shichur. In the meantime, were they allowed to eat truma? Yes. So this would show, this point is to show that a me'ukov gets shichur is entitled to eat truma. The Gemara rejects this. Hachi hashta. How can you compare this, the case of the mix-up babies, to a standard me'ukov gets shichur? Hasam, in the case of the mixed-up babies, im yovoi eliyov yoimar b'chad mi'al di'evet hu. If Eliyahu Hanavi would come along, the prophet Elijah, who was privy to clarity in matters that are doubtful to us, and he would come and point his finger and say, this one is the slave. So one of these two babies slash adults, one of them is definitely Kinyan Kaspo Karina Bey, is definitely a slave. And if Elio would come and provide us with the clarity, there would be no need to give a freedom document one to the other. So, since we'll say that in potential, there is a clear, full-fledged evidence over here. It's just we don't know because of the confusion. But beneath the surface of our confusion, there is a clear Kinyan Kaspo. That's why he's entitled to eat truma. Hachalav kinyan kaspo hu klal. But in the case of a mu'ukav get shichur, the standard mu'ukav get shichur, like someone who declared his slave unowned, he's clearly unowned. He's clearly not the possession of the kohen. So that you can't compare or try to answer our case of a mu'ukav get shichur, where he's clearly not a slave. Two, you can't compare that or try to resolve that case from an example of the mixed up babies. Because in the case of the mixed up babies, there is at least potentially a full fledged Kinyan Kaspo that's still present. Before continuing, we glance at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading Eved Shemochroi Raboi Liknas. A person that owns a slave, he sells the slave, but only with regard to an aspect. He doesn't sell the slave completely. He sells the slave with regard to the knas payment. Now, what's the knas payment? We mentioned before that if a shor hamuad kills a slave 30 pieces of silver are paid. So someone who owns a slave sold his Knas collection rights to someone else. The slave is still alive. In the event that the slave would be killed, the person who bought the, we'll say, the options on the Knas, he will collect the payment. Right now, however, this is something that doesn't exist. He hasn't been killed yet. Da'avei dovar shelo boli olam. This is a concept that you find in many areas of halacha. It's something that hasn't come to be yet. Ha'ima mechira tofeses olam. Does the sale take hold or not? The Gemara. Notice we have a long question marking. This will take us a few lines down. Mem gimel amud aleph. And by the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So now the Gemara. Ibayalo, Eved Shemachre Rabbi Leknas, a slave that was sold by the master, only for Knas collection purposes. That the purchaser would be entitled, in the event that the slave is killed by a Shor Hamor, he, the outsider, the purchaser, would collect the 30 pieces of silver. Mochur or eno mochur, does that deal take hold or not? Well, this question can be asked according to two major opinions. Tiboya le Rebbe Meir, Tiboya le Rabbonan. The question can be posed to Rebbe Meir and it can be posed to the Rabbonan. What reference are we making to Rebbe Meir and the Rabbonan? The Gemara will explain itself. Tiboya le Rebbe Meir. The question could be raised in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Ad kan lo kom Rebbe Meir, odom makne dovar shelo boli olam. Rebbe Meir has a well-known opinion that things, maybe in English, in the financial markets, sometimes these could be referred to as futures, things that haven't come to be yet. We know that people, we see that people transact things like that. Well, according to Rebbe Meir, a person can transact things that have not come to be yet. But maybe he restricts his allowance, he restricts his leniency or his permission or his acceptance of such deals. Elokigoyim peros dekel. With regard to fruit of trees, fruits appear seasonally. A person, according to Rebbe Meir, can sell the as yet not having appeared fruits to someone. But why does a deal concerning fruits, in other words, if you have fruit that appears in the summer months and in the heart of the winter where the tree is barren, the owner of the tree can make a deal with a purchaser and say, you know, the fruit that this tree will produce are yours. And the purchaser pays him a certain amount of money that's worth it to him to buy the fruits that tree will produce. Maybe Rebbe Meir says deals like that go through because peros deka means fruit of a palm tree, the avidi diosu. According to nature, they are going to come out. They will definitely appear. Avalacha, but when you're dealing with the knas payment, miyemar deminda, who says, first of all, who says it's ever going to come to be? Who says that the slave will be gored? V'imtim tzilomar deminda, and if you say that, even if you say that the slave will be gored, mimai de mashalim, who says that the owner of the attacking ox would ever pay to begin with? Why is there any doubt concerning that? The Gemara continues at the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, Dilma Moidu Miftar. The owner of the attacking ox might confess before witnesses come saying that his ox gored. The owner himself will come and confess, you know, my ox killed your slave. Umiftar. And the Torah law says that if a person admits a knas type payment, it's called moideb knas, he doesn't have to pay it. So Rebbe Meir, though say lenient with regard to sales concerning things that haven't come to be, that's true, they haven't come to be, but they're going to come around. However, to suggest that Rabbi Meir would acknowledge the sale of the Knas, who says that it's ever going to come to be? We continue. V'tiboy l'Rabbanan, the same question of sale of Knas payment can be raised in accordance with Rabbanan. Ad kan lokum Rabbanan, ein odo makne dovar shelo bali olam. The Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Meir will tell you, you cannot sell things that haven't come to be yet. But those are Elo Kugon Peros Dekel. Their opposition to such sales is restricted to things like that resemble the case of Peros Dekel. What is unique about Peros Dekel, the fruit of the trees? The Hashtomio Lesnu, they're not around at all. The trees are barren. There are no buds even on the trees yet. There's nothing as far as fruits are concerned. Avolocha. But in the case of the Evan. Well, Hokoi Shor, the Hokoi Evan. All the elements that will be responsible for the Knas payment are present. The ox is here, the slave is here. My. So what is the din? Toshma. We have a Tanaic source. Notice we have a long marking. The Gemara presents a Tanaic source, and the result, we'll say, of the Gemara's attempt will be that there is no idea of selling Knas. It's something that cannot be sold. The Gemara, after this, let's see, long attempt, will pose challenges to what we're trying to conclude. Omar Rabbi Abba Toshma. This source describes the slaves of a Kohen as being entitled to eat Truma. The Pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Chof Beis Pasuk Yud Aleph. Let's read the Pasuk together. The Kohen Kiyikne Nefesh Kinyin Kaspoi. Notice we have this written on the side of the Gemara. A Kohen that acquires a person through a purchase, Hu Yochabo, he is entitled to eat it. The it is a reference to the Truma. Vili Beso, Haim Yochlu Balachmo. And those that are born in his household are entitled to eat Truma. We have two entities. We have a Kinyan Kaspo, and Yalid Beso, the Gemara. Toshma Yalid Bayis Ma Talmud Lomar. The Torah that says that one born in the Kohen's household is entitled to eat Truma. What is referred to? Im Kinyan Kesef Oichel. If someone bought by the Kohen is entitled to eat Truma, Yalid Bayis Lo Kol Shekein, one born in the household of the Kohen, all the more so. Well, why then does the Torah say that Yalid Bayis is entitled to eat the Truma? Ilu Kain, had the Torah not spelled out Yalid Bayis, Hayisi Oimer, I would have thought as follows. Ma kinyin kesef shiyesh bo yishove kesef oichel, just like one that you purchased. Now, if you purchased, you paid a certain minimum amount of money for the individual, so he has a value. He's shove kesef, he has value, so he eats. Af yilid bayis shiyesh bo yishove kesef oichel. So too, one born into the family of into the household of a Kohen. Kohen might have bondmaids, and the bondmaid conceives and gives birth to a child. He didn't buy that child. It's his slave by virtue of the fact that it was born into his household under the rubric of slavery. So had I had just the Torah's reference to Kinyan Kesef, I would figure, just like Kinyan Kesef is a slave that has value, so too, a Yalid Bayis, Sheish Bo Shavu Kesef Oichel, would be entitled to eat Truma. From where do I know that a Yalid Bayis that has no value is also entitled to eat Truma? Talmud Lomar Yalid Bayis, Mikol Mokoyim. the insertion, the addition of the term Yelid Bias on the part of the Torah tells me even if he has no value. Mikomoko means under all circumstances, with value, without value. But Dayan Ani Omer, Yelid Bias, at this point then I would say, okay, when you're dealing with Yelid Bias, Bain Sheesh Boy Shove Kesef, Bain Shein Boy Shove Kesef, Oichel, whether he has value or no value, he eats. Kinyan Kesef, when you're dealing with that kind of slave that the Kohen acquired, Yesh Boy Shove Kesef, Oichel, Ein Boy Shove Kesef, Eino Oichel. If he has value, as long as he has value, he eats. Once he has no value, Rashi says, "Af kinyan kesef af al pishenu shaviklum kagon shenase mukeshchin." You can have someone that was purchased by the Kohen, a slave purchased by a Kohen, but he eventually developed a body full of boils. In other words, mukeshchin, worthless right now. So I would say that when you're dealing with a kinyan kesef, if he has value, he eats. If he doesn't have value, he doesn't eat. Talmud Lomar, kinyan kaspu viud beso. Both are taught in the same pasuk. Ma yilid bayas af apishe neshove klum oichel. Just like a yilid bayas that we demonstrated above, even if he has no value, is entitled to eat. Af kinyan kaspu af apishe neshove klum oichel. So too, that which was he that was acquired by the Kohen, even though right now he doesn't have any value, nevertheless is entitled to eat truma. So in the course of this discussion, we have made reference to a slave that has no value. If one were to take the position that a slave that is sold by its master with regard to the knas payment. Remember, we said before that knas is a type of payment that is paid upon the killing of a slave regardless of the slave's market value. If it were so that a slave owner could sell the slave with regard to its knas value, Mi iko avdo dolo mizdabin leknoso? Is there any evid that someone wouldn't buy for a pruta, for at least even a small amount of money, he would pay for the slave? So could you have a situation where if it were so that we would recognize a sale, the knas, that type of sale where the owner sells him with regard to the knas payment? You'll always find someone that would pay at least a pruta to become entitled to receive that payment. So, and yet above we described in the source an evid that has no value. So it must be that the sale of the knas is not a reality. It's something that just doesn't get off the ground, and hence people won't pay for that. So, since people would not pay for it, you can have a case of a slave that has no value. The Gemara responds and says, "In Iko Eved Trefa." In general, I could tell you that the payment, the knas payment, is something that could be sold. You'll ask, then, how do you have a situation of an eved that doesn't have a knas, a potential knas payment? There is an example of a type of eved, a type of situation where there is no potential knas payment. And what is that? In Iko Eved Trefa. Knas is a payment made for an ox that kills. That means you had an eved that before the goring was considered alive, as a result of the goring, dead. If you have a situation, which we'll get immediately to the point, the trefa. Trefa is a person that, though he's walking around, he's halachically speaking like dead. He's got some type of organ deficiency from which he will die. He will die. He's a trefa. And therefore, the ox in goring and killing the trefa, he hasn't killed a living person. In halachic terms, he's already considered dead before the ox gored him. So we can show you a situation of a slave that doesn't have a knas payment. And therefore, with regard to describing a slave as having at least the value of being able to sold for the knas, well, if it's an eved that has no potential knas payment, so he wouldn't be sold for the knas, but other avodim could be sold with regard to their knas. The Gemara says, but v'hachazi l'mekam kameh. Okay, he's going to die, he's a trefa, but why would the source above describe him as eino shava klum? He's still, right now, until he eventually dies, he's still walking around, he can serve drinks, he can do things, he's fit l'mekam kameh, to stand in service of his owner. So, he still has that value? The Gemara says, no. B'menuvu mukishchin, we're talking about an eved that is a trefa, and he's also a disgusting, he's a person whose body is filled with boils, and it would be disgusting to have him even serving a cup of water. So he has no value. And that's what the source was describing. The posuk in Vayikruchov Beis, posuk Yud Aleph. However, if you're dealing with a regular, a healthy slave, there's still room to consider that he could be sold with regard to his knas payment. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.